You know, if it is my last year, you know, I can't say I'm going out 0-16, you know. I can't go out like that, you know. So we just going to keep working as a team, you know, and hopefully we can just try to get one, man. And I can't wait till we get it.
He might be the most understated legend in NFL history. A man who only sits behind Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton on the NFL's all-time rushing list. But this season, his 16th in the league, Frank Gore finds himself at a different extreme. An extreme called the New York Jets. Today, with the 0-11 Jets close to becoming the third team ever to lose all 16 games, we examine the curious case of Frank Gore, whose entire life is about pushing forward, maybe even into 2021 and beyond. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, December 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Tim Kuhn, you recently wrote a profile of Frank Gore for ESPN.com. So what inspired you to take him on as a topic at this particular moment?
It's interesting, Pablo, because I've watched his career forever. I'm in the Bay Area, so I followed him when he was with the 49ers. And he's always struck me as someone who's sort of exists outside of our current time.
ESPN's Tim Kuhn has been writing about the NFL for three decades.
Like, he's this guy that's the third leading rusher all time, and yet he doesn't really seem to be appreciated, or there's not a highlight that you can point to. He's just sort of this guy that has just existed forever in our consciousness. And
right.
And the fact that he's on the Jets, he's their lead back still. It just became this thing, like, you know, how remarkable it is for someone his age, 37 years old, from the 2005 draft class as a running back, is still not only in the league, but productive.
And you spoke to him on the phone for a long time for this story. And as you say, like, despite him being this guy with a resume that might be worthy of Canton consideration, Hall of Fame consideration, he is fairly anonymous. So tell us what he's actually like as a person.
He is a man of few words, and he is, we did have a very long conversation, he just is a football guy. I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche, but everyone you talk to about Frank says that he's this savant. He's one of those people that can do these things, but isn't particularly good at explaining them. And I think it's partly because what he does is just is a product of work and study and just feel. And it's another reason why he's one of a kind.
I'm not a talker. I'm really not a talker, you know, but I know I've been blessed with the ability to play football at a high level. I'm going to go out there every day, you know, give it up my all on the field and in the game. I'm going to give my teammates my all too. And I take advantage of it. And the reason why I take advantage of it, because it got taken away from me in college. So I know that, you know, this game not promised to nobody.
As we hear Frank say in that press conference clip, Tim, his injuries in college were an enormous part of his story early on. He had come to the University of Miami out of nearby Coral Gables High School. And as a freshman, he was a backup on that iconic team that won the 2001 national title, scoring 5 touchdowns that year and really impressing people as this up-and-comer. But tell us what played out over the next few seasons.
You talk about remarkable. I mean, he had 2 ACL tears at the University of Miami, and was on those U teams with guys like McGahee and Clinton Portis, and it just was one star after another in the backfield. And he pushed himself to overcome these injuries and to compete with those guys. Obviously, for a running back, an ACL tear is among the worst, and to have it twice in college, you know, it would seem to be insurmountable. It cost him some speed. You know, as a freshman, he was kind of a revelation as a speed back. You know, what we think of him now isn't necessarily that. It's the tough yards and it's the inside yards. So I think he had to adapt a little bit to what he could do when he lost a step or two.
Here's the snap. Gives it. Gore. Frank Gore. Driving. End zone. Touchdown. Frank Gore.
Once again, the man out of Coral Gables brings a victory to the Miami Hurricane.
He just willed himself to become a third-round draft pick of the 49ers in 2005. Only a handful of guys from that draft are still playing, and most of them are quarterbacks and kickers.
So, Tim, because of that injury history you mentioned, Frank Gore ends up falling to the third round in the 2005 draft, and he gets taken by the Niners. What was Frank hoping to find in San Francisco as he first entered the league?
A job, really. I mean, he just wanted to prove that he could play. And I think that what they saw immediately was this hunger, you know, that he was willing to do everything. He'd put in the time in the study room. He put in the time on the practice field. He was always the first guy there. All the cliches about these great athletes that hold true. Held true with Frank. But right away, they saw that they had someone who had something different, had something a little special in terms of how he approached the game.
So for those who have never actually laid eyes on Frank Gore, what does he look like in terms of his physique, his body type? How would you begin to describe the man?
Square, Pablo. He's short, he's squat, he's strong, obviously. I described his running style as kind of burrowing, which is really what he does. He just gets in the pile and just somehow finds his way out of it, you know, at the other end. And Anthony Costanzo, who's played with him in Indianapolis at offensive tackle, said that he was trying to think of what his memory of Frank's career would be, and he said, "The vision I have is just a pile of bodies and this one guy squirting out of the other end of it."
Gore stumbled, gets the handoff, keeps driving left and scores a 49er touchdown. Give it inside, Frank Gore, bust middle 30, 25, outside, 10, 5, touchdown, 49ers.
That's the enduring image of Frank Gore, is this guy who just finds his way through, almost gets lost in the pile and keeps going forward until he finds his way out of it.
Give it to Gore, up the middle, another crease, 25, 30, breakthrough 40, foot race, midfield, Gore to the 40, angles right, 10, 5, dive, touchdown, Niners! 79 yards, Frank Gore!
So in 2012, Frank helped bring the Niners back to the brink of a Super Bowl title. What was that season like?
It was kind of a crazy season for the 49ers. I mean, they had kind of been getting better gradually, and Frank was a big part of it. And with Jim Harbaugh, you know, that season, Frank was the thing that drove them. He was the engine. And Harbaugh has the perfect mentality for Frank Gore. And Harbaugh once described Frank as a mythical figure in football, because he felt that he was just so, his attitude, he was just so quiet and worked so hard and just had this single-minded devotion.
Nobody does it better than Frank Gore. Nobody. Have the greatest respect for Frank because he has the greatest respect for the game. It's evidence how he plays every single day, every single game.
All any football coach ever wants from a player is someone who really cares almost entirely about the game. And given Harbaugh's mentality, that worked perfectly.
Hand off Gore, trying to bounce it outside right, Scott Roof. Turns 15, 10, 5, Frank Gore. Touchdown, 49ers. Ball fumbled off the snap. Gore picks it up in the backfield. Frank reverses field and runs up the middle for a touchdown. What a run. That is one of Gore's greatest runs ever. That might be the best three-yard touchdown run.
And that season was really the highlight of Gore's career, I think. And he still, in talking to me, he still was bemoaning the fact that they didn't win.
Fourth and goal. Lost it in the air. No flag. Incomplete. The Super Bowl belongs to Baltimore.
Kind of sad to think that when he says the one thing that he misses from his career is not winning the Super Bowl, and now you see him on the Jets. It's kind of, it kind of makes you feel for Frank a little bit.
So just to close the loop here, He spends 10 years in San Francisco. The Niners figure out that a 31-year-old Frank Gore, probably past his prime, so he ends up moving on to Indianapolis, has three 900-plus yard seasons there, becomes this cult hero to fans in Indy, and then he makes the rounds from the Bills to the Dolphins, and now, finally, to the Jets. But through it all, Tim, you've noted that there is a signature play that sums up Frank Gore's oeuvre throughout all of this. What is that play, and what does it say about him?
The play, Pablo, is power through the A-gap. And I think everyone who's ever played with Frank has that stuck in their head. And it's the most basic play. It's the offside guard pulls through the A-gap, which is on either side of the center. And the fullback leads, and the ball goes to the back, who in this most cases through the last 15 years has been Frank Gore. And he just tries to find the smallest hole to get through and take it from there. It's hilarious to talk to guys who have blocked for him in the past, and Joe Staley in San Francisco, obviously for years and years. And Joe told me that that Frank's answer to everything is more power. If they're not throwing the ball well, they got to run more power. If they're not running outside well, they got to run more power. And even if they're not running power well, they got to run more power, because eventually it'll work. His relentlessness throughout his career can be summarized by this power through the A-gap, repeatedly just beating down other teams and, in a way, elevating his own.
Another give to Gore, finds room over the left side, and that's a gain of 7, and that is enough. Frank Gore is now the third all-time leading rusher in NFL history. How about that? You saw it here today, folks. Frank Gore gets...
Okay. After the break, I want to look at how Frank Gore is playing the long game with the New York Jets, and how one family member might make that game even longer than you think.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Tim, it is now 2020, and Frank Gore finds himself with the New York Jets. And there weren't, like, great expectations for the Jets coming into the year, but what they are now as the preeminent toilet bowl of the NFL at 0-11, why do you think Frank wanted to play for this team this year?
Well, first off, because they wanted him, but there's a deeper answer to that, and that is that much maligned Adam Gase and Frank Gore go back to Frank's early years with the 49ers when Gase was an assistant for Mike Martz, kind of a quality control guy for the offensive coordinator. And they struck up a friendship. And Gase was struck by how Frank treated everyone from the equipment guys to the Pro Bowl players to the guys who wash the players' cars with the same level of dignity. And Gase was a low-level guy that Frank just gravitated to, and they became friends. And at the time, it seemed like kind of a wild prediction, but Gase said, when I become a head coach, you're going to be on my team, no matter when that happens. And when he got his job in Miami, that's what happened. Gore ended up there. And now that Gase is in New York with the Jets, it seemed kind of natural that Frank would end up there playing for him. And the guy that Gase can point to as an example of what a professional is, and they probably need that there. So that's the role he's on. He's taken.
A lot of young guys seeing me at my age, practicing the way I practice, and hopefully they can watch me and just follow me. So that's why I try to do it.
So you mentioned in your story that There are specific examples that give context to the notion of him being this high character, good for the culture kind of player, this quasi coach. In a meeting with Adam Gase, what happened in that meeting?
As Gase tells the story, he was just sitting in his office. It was almost 9 o'clock. He thought all the players were gone. His door's part way open. He hears a little knock and he looks, and there's Frank in the doorway. And eventually Frank turns and calls someone from down the hall to come in, and it's LaMichael Perine, who is a rookie that they have high hopes for, who's Frank's backfield mate. He brought him in, and Perine stood there like, you know, he was being called into the principal's office or something. Frank told Gase that he wanted to talk about whatever blitz packages the team they were playing that weekend had, and he wanted Perine to see how he studies, and he wants him to get the full effect. So instead of just staying back in the running back's room and being told what Gase said, Frank brought him down there and said, you know, we're going in here, and we're going to talk about it with the coach, and you're going to see what I see, and you're going to see how I do it. You know, as Gase said, when they have high hopes for a player, which they do with Perine, it's like a great thing to have someone like that as a resource who can say, it's not just what you do at practice, it's what you do afterward. It's all those things that, you know, that coaches preach and often don't get to see.
And to be clear about how rare this is, I mean, this is a 37-year-old, possibly Hall of Fame caliber vet going over blitz pickups with the head coach?
On a Wednesday night at 9 o'clock and bringing the rookie along with him. Yeah, it is not normal.
But what is truly abnormal about what's happening to Frank Gore right now is that he's on a team with zero wins this late into the season. So how difficult do you think it is for Frank to stay positive amid all of the bad going on in New York?
I think that he really just looks forward. You know, I don't know how introspective Frank is.
You know, I've been on some, you know, some teams that we struggle, you know. Nobody not going to feel sorry for us. We're going to keep every game coming in, looking at each other, saying we need to do this better, do that.
The whole myth of Frank, the whole legend is just this guy that just keeps going forward, you know, in all cases. And I think it works here, too. I think he just looks to the next game. And as we spoke, I can't count the number of times that he said, I'm just trying to get these young guys a win. And that was several weeks ago. He still hasn't done it, but he's still, I guarantee if I called him right now, he would say the same thing. Just trying to get these young guys a win. And I think that, you know, that in terms of the public, it may not have much of an impact, but in terms of football people and guys that he's in the locker room with, it's a great thing for Frank's image that he has stayed positive in this situation and kept grinding.
So Frank is still pushing the ball forward, pushing the boulder up the hill over and over again. It rolls back over and over again. And you reported in your piece a subplot within his family that might explain part of his determination there. What is the situation with his family and his son?
Well, Pablo, Frank Gore Jr. is a freshman starting running back at Southern Mississippi and a very good one. On the weekend of November 22nd, Frank Gore Sr. and Frank Gore Jr. each scored touchdowns. Frank Gore Jr. on the Saturday scored a receiving touchdown against University of Texas of San Antonio.
Oh, look at him go! Frank Gore Jr. into space. Like father? No, it's like son. Frank Gore Jr. into the end zone.
And the next day against the Chargers, his dad scored a touchdown of his own.
Starts left, cuts it back to the right. At the goal line, he's in. That's a jet touchdown. Frank Gore on the one-yard dive.
Frank Gore Jr. told me that he hopes his dad hangs around until they can play together in the NFL. And that would mean probably another 3 years, which would mean a 40-year-old Frank Gore. And before you laugh at that, I mean, there is reason to believe that given all the things that we've already talked about, that somebody might continue to give him a chance. There's never been a father-son combo play at the same time in the NFL. And as unlikely as it is, how cool would it be if it was a running back and it was Frank Gore that was the first guy to play at the same time as his son in the NFL? I have a feeling that there are two people named Frank Gore who think it might be possible.
I keep thinking about that Super Bowl that he almost won with the Niners and the fact that he hasn't won one despite being in the league in all these different scenarios. It is tragic in a certain sense. So what do you think the odds are of him just trying to sign on somewhere to get that ring in specific?
This is going to sound really strange, but it almost seems more fitting for someone like Frank Gore to go out trying to continue to push that rock up the hill on a team like the Jets. And I think that it just doesn't, he doesn't seem like the guy that would just chase the ring that way. Now he may, and if a really good team expresses interest, I know that odds are he would go there. But there's just the ethic of Frank Gore. It would just seem to be a little bit out of character if he did that. It's hard to look at Frank's career and say that something's really missing because he's had such a remarkable career and it's been so long that it doesn't feel like he has to prove anything. But, you know, that's how guys like him push themselves. So there's a chance that that might be his motivation.
Can you see Frank Gore then, Tim? Because I want to lay the stakes out here. Can you see him retiring on 0-16?
Only if he's forced to. Only if every team decides that they don't need him. But I think if there's an invite after this season, I think he plays on.
I'm still doing something I love. I'm still having fun doing it. I'm happy, man. I'm going to do whatever it takes to help my team be successful on Sunday. I know my number get called.
Tim Kuehn, thank you so much for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo.
All right, coming up, we are joined by a man who explains why BYU versus Coastal Carolina is the college football game of his dreams, and maybe yours too.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Here's another story I want you to know. Yesterday, we learned that a COVID outbreak at Liberty University has knocked them out of tomorrow's marquee game at number 18 Coastal Carolina at 5:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. And in Liberty's stead will be number 13 BYU, therefore making that big game even bigger. So I had to call up my coworker who is more excited about tomorrow's events than I think any other human being on the planet, ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee. Ryan McGee, I know this is the day you've spent your whole life building to, some are saying.
Oh, yeah.
So how excited are you for this, man?
You don't even understand. And I got the call that they have invited me to be the sideline reporter for the game, which I've never done.
Wow.
And normally I would be nervous, but me talking about the Grand Strand Myrtle Beach area, I mean, I've only been doing that since I could talk. So I'm good, man. I'm fine. As long as I can talk about saltwater taffy and airbrush t-shirts and work that into the broadcast, I'll be all right.
So we need to get to all of this, but I want to begin with the very basic first, because I don't know if many people out there, Ryan, are familiar with Coastal Carolina, let alone what a Chanticleer is. So explain to the people what this mascot is all about.
So first of all, Coastal Carolina, and I grew up in the Carolinas. I graduated high school in South Carolina. When I was coming along, and this was in the 80s and 90s, you know, it was USC Coastal, the University of South Carolina Coastal. And for those of us who grew up in the Carolinas, the school that used to be USC Coastal, being a top 25 team, hosting College Game Day, is insanity. I say all that to tell you this. So USC Coastal was a satellite campus of the University of South Carolina. When they decided to go it alone as a four-year school and they needed a mascot for their sports teams, they wanted to have a mascot that paid tribute to their big brothers down in Columbia, South Carolina, the Gamecocks, but they also kind of wanted to thumb their nose or their beak or whatever you want to say at the Gamecocks. And so a group of students went to a literature professor, and he went to Chaucer. And the nun's priest tale in the Canterbury Tales wrote about the Chanticleer as being essentially a really, really fancy, proud, and fierce rooster.
Wait, so Chaucer and airbrush t-shirts is what Coastal Carolina does, is what you're saying?
I'm saying that you're speaking my language, is what I'm saying. So I'm going to read some Chaucer. For crowing, there was not his equal in all the land. His voice was merrier than the merry organ that plays in church. And his crowing from his resting place was more trustworthy than a clock. His comb was redder than fine coral and turreted like a castle wall. His bill was black and shone like a jet, and his legs and toes were azure. His nails were whiter than the lily, and his feathers were like burnished gold. With all of his splendor and great looks, Chanticleer is also greatly feared and mightily respected by all.
I don't know if we've ever had a 600-year-old plus reference to a rooster delivered as articulately, as eloquently, Ryan, as you just delivered that. Beyond the Chanticleer, as I get my own Anglophone pronunciation precise on this, give me some of the other things you love about Coastal Carolina.
I just love the fact that we're told that you can't build something from nothing, not in this world. And Coastal Carolina literally, almost to the day, 2002, so less than 20 years ago, they broke ground on Brooks Stadium, which, by the way, is named for the founder of Hooters Restaurants.
Naturally.
When they broke ground on the stadium, they had to move the wild watermelons out of the way because this used to be a high school football field. The university, then just the college, bought this plot of land right on the edge of their campus. Hey, let's build a football stadium. But before they did the whole stick the shovels in the dirt and ceremonial groundbreaking, they had to move away the wild watermelons. To get from there to a top 20 game against BYU on national television hosting College Game Day, Chanticleer is indeed.
The Chanticleers win it over Georgia Southern to improve to 5-0 today.
The players on this team, and they take their cues from a coaching staff that is brilliant when it comes to football, but is also borderline insane. I mean, when they defeated Georgia Southern, they had this unbelievably choreographed celebration where somebody came in and dropped like a Macho Man, Randy Savage, elbow drop on a guy, threw a broken table. And oh, by the way, the guy was wearing like a cheap dollar store Georgia Southern mascot costume. It's just fun, man.
You have been the ambassador on behalf of Coastal Carolina, and you have a particular platform also in terms of where game day should be putting their set on Myrtle Beach.
Yeah.
So explain to us your grand plan. What are the options that we have here?
You know, I've been at ESPN most of my adult life, and I have felt like, when is the moment going to be when I can educate the Jeremy Shapps of the world? And so, yeah, as soon as College Game Day announced earlier this week that they were going to go to Coastal, I immediately went to Twitter and started posting pictures of this is where you need to be. For example, they have a stretch of seafood buffet restaurants called Restaurant Row. And the centerpiece of that is the Giant Crab Buffet. And it's called the Giant Crab Buffet because over the door, there's literally a giant crab. I mean, that thing is like 30 feet across. And so I said, just do it in the parking lot there, or do it in the parking lot at Bargain Beachwear or Waves or any of these T-shirt shops, because a lot of them have giant sharks over the door. It's redneck Disney World, man. You know, you go to Disney World, and everywhere you go, there's like a 30-foot tall, you know, Woody or Buzz Lightyear or Minnie Mouse. And when you go to Myrtle Beach, it's a gigantic crab, or you have to walk through a shark's mouth to go buy a souvenir.
I am looking at a photo of this crab. You left out a key detail, which is that the crab is wearing a hat.
Yeah, well, of course it is. Is it the beach? And listen, you go with me down to the Grand Strand, and I will show you why it's grand.
Ryan McGee, our Coastal Carolina ambassador, you, much like the Chanticleer, are also greatly feared and mightily respected by all.
I don't know if you can tell, I'm a little fired up about this.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Troy Farkas, Eric Neal, and Craig Lazarus. I'll talk to you Monday.